Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Master of Inspiration. I am Master Karen Eden. And here we are, getting closer and closer to another brand new year. And there are people like me who tend to like blah, blah, blah over holidays and go right to the next year. Because that's just the way I am. I'm not a big holiday person because I can be really anal about my routines, and I don't like to have days off, believe it or not. I like to keep my routine going. I got it down. I don't like things to interrupt what I'm doing. But anyway, as we just continue to move forward, I hope that something that I say on today's show will make a difference in your life, maybe inspire you, and I'd love your feedback, so let me know. And if you have an idea or you think you would be a really good guest, let me know. We can talk about that. Speaking of guests, you know what? This is very near and dear to my heart today because I actually have on with me one of the longest friends that I can remember ever having. This is my childhood friend, and his name is Tim. Hi, Tim.
Hey, Karen. How are you?
I'm good, and I'm so glad to hear your voice. And I'm laughing because it took me a long time to get rid of that accent from the South, and when I talk to you, I tend to want to do it again. So people going to be going, what? What happened to her? You know, seriously, when I got into broadcasting, and, you know, I did it professionally for a long time, 25 years into broadcast news and even radio before that, I had to get rid of my accent. But when I go home or I talk to a dear friend, then sometimes it comes back. Okay, so Tim, I know you probably don't know this about me, but I actually did really well losing my southern drawl, except for one word, and that word is Tuesday. I don't know why I can't say Tuesday the way everybody else can, but that's just it. That'll be your little cue whenever you hear me talk and I got to be somewhere on Tuesday. Then you know, well, man, that girl, she's from the South or something. So,
hey, it's okay. I can't get rid of mine either.
I know, but see, it works well with you, especially, you know, when you have to ask for money.
I've made a lot of money with my accent, so it works for me.
You know what? People ask for money or preachers. You got that down, you're going to do real good. Okay. All right, Tim, let's just do a little bit of history here. There are a couple of friends that I've known my entire life that I can remember, and you're one of them, and we're from the same neighborhood. You know, we went to the same school, and throughout our lives, we've kind of taken different journeys, you know, and moved around and lost contact, but we always kind of get back up with each other, and I'm talking like early elementary school. We're from a town called Vinton. I guess that's not funny. But anyway, I'm from Vinton. Tim's from Vinton. Tim still lives in Vinton.
There's not much in Vinton.
Okay.
You did well leaving.
So in a neighborhood plan, it's called Valley High. Now, Valley High is really interesting because they decided back in like the early 70s, like 70, 71, I don't know, somewhere around there, that they were going to federally subsidize the housings that were down in the valley of that area. And of course, I grew up in that area, but Tim, you in the same neighborhood, but you were kind of on the hill. So, but what we shared is we shared the woods and we shared the creek down by Old Man Peter's farm where we all played. And there were just a boatload of kids, man. I mean, you couldn't even drive your car through the street because we ruled it. We weren't going to get out of the street. There's just too many of us. And so you remember Old Man Peter's farm, don't you?
Oh, yeah, many times.
Yeah, and I think I remember seeing you jogging back and forth there on that road. Ruddle Road that goes by the old farmhouse. This is country, folks. We're talking growing up right in the shadow. Okay, my memory eludes me, but we're talking about growing up right in the shadow of the Blue Ridge Mountains. I mean, that's where we went to school, right off the Blue Ridge Parkway. Beautiful there. But I used to take my walks there, and I'd see you jogging back and forth, and we rode the school bus together, and, you know, we had fun. All of us had fun, all the kids from that hood. But you know what? We never really, you know, got to talk real deep like we still do a lot of times today. And, you know, one of the reasons why is because I was so little. We were both so little, you know, boys were kind of yucky back then. So, anyway, you know, what was it? What's the word, cooties?
Yeah.
Cooties. But, you know, anyway, we kind of grew up there in that neighborhood and always, you know, got along real well and continue to have a really good friendship. Okay, Tim, what I didn't know about you and where we're going to go with this today, and I'm assuming you don't mind. I'm hoping you don't mind. And ladies and gentlemen, I kind of forced him to do the show. and he knows me well enough to know that I don't really give any clues too much of what I'm going to talk about. I kind of fly with it. And so I know he's probably scared to death right now, like, oh, heck, what is she going to do?
Yeah, okay, I'm not buddy? Sure what you're going to say, but let's roll with it.
All right. So anyway, what we never talked about growing up was our childhoods were no bed of roses, neither one of us. I didn't know a whole lot about your childhood, and you really didn't know a whole lot about mine. I mean, I know what I thought I saw, but that necessarily wasn't the case. And I'm sure you thought you knew what you saw with me, but you had no clue until we sat down and, you know, talked about these things one day that, you know, it was rough. I mean, it was just really rugged. And, you know, I mean, I think we both can respect the fact that at that time in our life, and, you know, it was a long time ago, but, yeah, perhaps our parents did the best that they could at that time. But, you know, for whatever reason, neither one of us got a really good foundation that you would need to, you know, kind of grow up and go on with your life. So, you know, for me personally, I've been doing a lot of thinking about this lately, and that's why I wanted to bring you in, because I know you remember me from, like, you know, first and second grade and on. And, you know, I you would just be so great for me to bounce off of. So thank you for being here.
Sure.
I try not to embarrass you or anything, being that we've been friends for so long. But, okay, so, Tim, you tell me, you know, when you knew me back then, what did you kind of think about me as a, you know, growing up and all? Just what do you think?
Well, there were so many kids in the neighborhood back then. We all had our little cliques and our little groups that we hung out with. And it's not like today where you're sitting at your house playing video games. Our games was out. We went outside. We went exploring mm-hmm. through the woods and down on Mr. Peter's farm and all that good stuff. Not like what they do today. So we were out. I never really stayed around the family that much because my family was hardly ever together. I'm not
right.
sure how yours was.
Well, it was just the three of us, and I couldn't wait for us to not be together. Oh, my gosh. Hopefully nobody in my family just listen to this. But, I mean, I mean that in all sincerity, it was really, really hard growing up the way that I did from a broken home and, you know, being less fortunate in many ways, including financially. Man, not having – I remember going to bed sometimes. We didn't have anything to eat. It was that bad. It was just bad. It was a bad situation. And, you know, I can remember that the way the houses rolled out there, they're like identical. It's like one house after another that's identical. And so I know your house was – just like mine as far as the layout, even though mine was down in the valley and it was a federally subsidized house plan, your house was like mine, only it was up on the hill. And it consisted of, you know, a very small ranch with technically two bedrooms, unless you turned the dining room into a bedroom, then you can have three bedrooms. But that's it. Am I right?
You're right. We had three bedrooms. One was small, but basically a cookie cutter housing project, basically, as you want to call
it. Yeah, that's exactly it. So anyway, you know, growing up, once we got a little bit older, you kind of went your way. You know, I went mine, and I couldn't help but notice that you kind of turned into a party boy there.
Yeah. Well, I did have a little bit of fun, yes.
I mean, it was like, you know, if there is a party, Tim was going to be there. You know, and I wasn't that kind of girl because I was extremely, what's the word? I don't want to say antisocial, but I was antisocial. So I really didn't hang out with a whole lot of people, and I really couldn't hang out. I wasn't really allowed to do a lot of activities, not just parties, which is no big deal looking back, but I couldn't do even a lot of school activities because of the way things were financially. Even to have the money to do any type of school activity was going to be out of the question. Hey, I don't know if you know this, but seriously, Tim, when you're poor, you know, even if you have $5 or even $2, man, that's a lot of money that you can use for something else. Do you know what I mean?
Right, I do. I grew up poor too.
I know. And so when your parents get a couple extra bucks, it's not going to go to a school event. I mean, because every day, for my family anyway, was, you know, that's a couple of dollars we can go buy something that we need, like food or something. So it was a very difficult journey, but I'm glad that I have someone here that I can kind of share with that, because I know that you were there, and there's just a comfort level to that. Okay, so now, you know, I was talking about how you got to be a little bit older, you got into partying, and it's funny, but it's not, because, I mean, you were really getting into, like, some heavy drinking and kind of going the opposite way, and that broke my heart a little bit. But you know what? We talked today, and I look back, and I realized that what kind of foundation did you even have to have an understanding of what it was like and how you were supposed to have focus and direction growing up? Now, I'm going to bounce that back to you, and you tell me all you want to tell me about it, because I don't know what all you do want to tell me about it.
Well, I had no direction in my life growing up. My father was always, he was a partier, and he was never there. He was always, he would work, he would give my mother his check, and he would be gone. And I didn't really even know my father until I was 18 years old, because he was always gone. And then when I became 18, I could drink a beer. Then we got together and we did some partying together. And we kind of got close that way, which is really the wrong way to go in life from father and son. But
yeah.
I had no direction in anything.
Right. And so when we talk, and I didn't have, you know, I didn't have a family member or anything that had issues with substance, things of that nature, but I didn't have anybody invest in me either because things were so chaotic at my house. What I've discovered, and tell me if you agree with this, is, you know, when you come out of a foundation like that, like that's all you had to build on, you can still go on with your life and do great things. You can still have everything you want. You can still have the most wonderful life you could think of. The difference is when you don't have a good foundation, man, it takes twice as long, if not longer, because you have to build that foundation on your own. And a lot of times you're in error in judgment. And then you got to go rip the foundation up again and rebuild it. Because, you know, you got to learn your own lessons by trial and error, and it takes time. And I look back and I think, you know, as an 18-year-old girl, I had all this potential that I didn't even know about, you know, because nobody really expended the time. You know, I mean, I started working, like, before I was 16 years old, and there would be people, even my bosses and stuff, that would say, wow, Karen, you know, for 16, you're kind of blowing me away. I had a boss in radio that did that. I did radio when I was 15 years old, and he said, that's just, you just don't know. But you don't really, because it's not your parent, you know, or someone like that, you don't grasp it like you need to when it would come from a parent. And not really knowing how valuable I was, you know, to the world, and I say that in all humility, not realizing how much potential I had. I really think if I would have had that foundation growing up, that I would have got everything I have now a whole lot quicker. You know what I mean? A whole lot quicker.
Definitely.
Yeah. I mean, instead of, you know, screwing up here and there, and especially in relationships, screwing up and like, wow, you know, that was a mistake, you know?
Oh, you were much better than I was. You were in radio. I was working in fast food when I was 15.
Yeah, and you screwed up some relationships on your own.
Quite a few.
Yeah, I know. But you see, but I mean, couldn't you agree with me on that? You know, it's, I mean, I'm great now. And you are too, man. You're very blessed. You end up being a property owner. You have several properties. Yeah, you're doing great. And I'm proud of you for that, because you came out of nothing, really, to find your own way. But if you could have had a good foundation, you know, something to give you a good start, which is what a foundation is, maybe we wouldn't have struggled so much in the 20s and even the 30s and so on. You know, maybe we would have already known how valuable we were, and we could have made that much of a difference. So that's one side of the sword of what I think and what I feel. Do you want to say anything else about that? Because I'm going to go to the other side now.
Well,
what do you want to say?
I think a lot of people are probably in the same shoes that we were in back there. Some get better direction. I got zero. Obviously, you got zero. You have to figure it out yourself. My parents kept saying, well, actually my father was, get a job, son. Just get a job, which I had no direction in what job. What job pays money? Am I a garbage man or am I president? I mean, it was no direction in between of what to do. I had to figure it out myself. Just getting a job nowadays means you can define yourself of going nowhere in a nowhere job. So if you have direction, get a job where it makes money, get a job for what you like to do. I mean, I had no idea. I was young, so I didn't know. Just get a job.
Right.
What do you do?
Right. And coming from, you know, kind of a small town train of thought, I mean, that's what your parents did. Your dad, he got a job, and he hated it. Right?
He hated his job. I mean, he never did find anything that he wanted to do with his life. He was
right.
He had a dream. He never chased his dream. And,
well, he worked
I've
for the NW Railroad. You know, I'm sure you don't mind me saying, NW Railroad is probably the largest employer. Was it one time in Roanoke, in the Roanoke Valley, because that's the employer, and that's how the town sprung up off of working at the NW Railroad. And you know, maybe that's what led him to, maybe he hated the job so much, that's what led him to go astray and want to party all the time. You know what I mean? A lot of people think, well, if I'm doing my job and I'm pulling my load and I'm bringing a paycheck home, now it's my turn because I'm miserable. So.
Well, I think in his thing was, he was 18 years old when I was on the way. So he didn't really have his youth because he was a father. And him and my mother got married, and they had me coming, so he had to get a job. There was, and back in the 60s, there was no other option. You get a job, and I'm sure his father told him the same thing. Get a job, take care of your family, and that's it. But
exactly.
His father died when he was 19, so I don't think he had the right direction, and he just passed it on down to me. Get a job.
Right.
That was what his advice was.
Right. So here you have, you know, a kid having a kid who maybe emotionally isn't steady enough to even expend what he needed to on you. But here's the other side of the sword. I always say everything's a double-edged sword. You know, the other side is you went on with your life and you actually did, you know, you followed in his footsteps with the party thing for quite some time. I lost contact with you. I was building a career, and, you know, when we reconnected as adults and we had some experience under our belts, we both really met on one level that superseded anything that we could both say, yes, this really changed my life. And that is that you became a spiritual person. You believe in Christ, which is your path of spirituality and mine. And that reconnected us on a different level because all of a sudden, everything that we talk about becomes very spiritual. That spiritual move, tell me about what happened, Tim. I mean, how did you get to be so spiritual? Because you weren't like that when we were growing up. And, you know, I went to church and I was a very good girl. I was. But, you know, I have unfortunately had my own journey and I had a lot of failures in my life before I could pick myself up and go, wow, this is who I am and what I'm supposed to be doing. Tell me about how you became a spiritual person from being that party person.
Well, when I was a teenager, well, most of my youth, I did go to church, but I didn't really get anything out of church. The people that I went to Sunday school with were talking about NASCAR racing. I really didn't understand, you know, where the steps were.
South, ladies and gentlemen, you have to understand what NASCAR is in the South. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah, it's big here. It was all about Richard Petty back then. That's all I heard at Sunday school. So I didn't really have any foundation, but the older that I got, the more that Christ was banging on my door. Says, he was knocking at the door. Was I able to hear him? And it got louder and louder until finally I definitely was hearing the knocking. Everywhere I was turning, I was running into Christian people. So I'm not sure I went chasing after Christ. I think he came and got me. And I think at some point, he comes to get everybody and just pulls you by the collar. That's what he did
okay,
for me.
Okay, but hang on a minute. We talked about this, and I know it's not that cut and dry. You were going through a certain time in your life, and you told me it humbled you, put you on your knees. I mean, do you mind? Please just think, talking about that a little bit, please.
Well, I had I got a job. I got quite a few jobs. They were dead-end jobs. They went nowhere. And I worked a job for a year at a delivery job. And the guy I was with, I was training him. It was on my one-year anniversary for my job. And I looked over at him, and I was training him that day. I was going back to get my raise that day, making $6 an hour. He told me he was getting $6.50. I asked him, how much are you getting? He said $6.50. So I said, well, shoot, I know I'm going to get a dollar or maybe $1.50 raise. So I get back there.
This was a long time ago. I mean, this was many, many years ago. Because that sounds like really bad money.
This was back into the late 80s.
Okay,
the late
80s. All right, keep going.
All right. So once he said that, I said, well, I'm going to get a good raise. So I go in the boss's office, and he gives me, he said, been doing a great job. He never missed a day. Said, I can depend on you. I'm gonna give you the max. I'm giving you a 25-cent raise per hour.
Okay.
Well, knowing that the guy just started with no experience was making more than me now on his first day, and I pulled a year, I immediately, it just hit me the wrong way. And I said, you know what? I reached in my pocket, pulled out a dollar, and I threw it on his desk. I said, you need this more than I do. So I quit that day.
Okay.
And I started my own delivery business the next day with my own little car. So I'm out there, and I built it up. It took a while, built it up, and I thought I was doing pretty good. The business was coming. I had to hire employees. I had to buy more vehicles. I borrowed money. I used the credit card money. I did everything until finally I got a pretty good income coming in from it. But I found out something that I never thought.
Okay, now hang on a minute, because you're going fast because you're reliving your life. But you know what? That's pretty darn good. That guy, even though you were insulted that he only gave you a 25-cent raise, he changed your life. Because you
turned my life around over a quarter.
Over a quarter, you went to be a business owner of your own, and you're being modest, because I know you made huge money with your delivery business. Because it spanned 3 states. So let's just get that straight, Mr.
Yeah.
I know
it got big.
Yeah, it got a little big there. And so you're working and you're working and you're making the money. I mean, big money. Take it from there.
I was making the big money, but I had I was working all the time, so I never had a chance to have any fun on my own. I had money, but I had no time. And if you don't have any time to spend your money, I built a prison around myself of misery.
Mm.
And
wow.
it wasn't any fun at all. Especially
wow.
when you're depending on employees and they quit. And believe me, back then I paid more money back then than the big delivery companies did. And I also paid for their dental and their health care when you didn't have to pay for health care. I paid 100% of it. So I want to make it different than all the other people that I didn't like working for, which it was awful. I will tell you, it was just awful. When you're in business for yourself, sometimes it can be good, but mine was not good. I made a lot of money.
Why did you say that? I mean, did you feel trapped? I mean, because all of a sudden you got this big ball rolling, and you got to keep rolling it. I mean, it almost seems to me like you started to get really trapped by all your success. Does that make sense?
Oh, definitely. Like I said, I built myself into my own prison where I couldn't escape my own business. And it
wow.
was nothing but trying to get bigger in order to make more money, but with more things that you – the bigger you get, the more responsibility you have and the more money and bills you have to pay for. So you got to keep that thing rolling all the time. And it was just year after year, it was just bringing me down.
It
mentally
was
and physically. Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
very stressful. Very stressful.
Okay.
I didn't like having one boss, but when I got into that business, I had 40, 50, 60, 70 bosses, which I didn't like that either, even though I was
yeah.
my own boss.
Right. Because you had clients. You had clients.
Oh, yeah. My clients were my bosses. They were paying
exactly.
me to do a job.
So one day you broke, am I right? You just, but that was it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. I broke. I broke big time. I mean, I couldn't tell you how many years I said next year will be better. And next year came and it was always, well, next year be better. And it just didn't get any better for me. I was growing, but it was just pounding on me of wasting my life. I was not happy. I had money. And who ever thought, Karen, that if you have money, how could you be unhappy? You've heard the stories on TV and the famous people, how miserable they are, and they kill themselves and all. I know that feeling now.
Mm.
I used to pull off to the side of the road and just cry. Just pull over and cry and ask the Lord to change my life. I said, this was just not what I thought it was going to be.
Wow.
And if you know me, I'm the type of person that doesn't cry very easily. So
I've never known you to cry. I've never known you, you know, gee, I've never known you to be nice. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
You
okay,
know I'm not.
So you know, I love you with all my heart, seriously. Okay, so you know, someone like you, when you get put on your knees on the side of the road with this huge, huge money-making business, that night, that changed your life. I mean, that really put you – what it did was it elevated you into the spiritual realm, the spirit realm. So when things happen in your life, even from the things of our childhood, even from the boss that only gave you a 25-cent raise, my point is it changes your life and puts you into a different realm where you either, you know, you change or you go down. I mean, it's almost like a sink or swim situation. So you really didn't have anybody go, Tim, listen, I want to teach you how to be spiritual. I'd like to teach you about the Lord or God. I'd like to teach you about Christ. Nobody really did that to you. You literally kind of sought that out, and it came to you, and it did change your life. Did you actually feel it change your life?
I was sitting here on my couch, and it was kind of overwhelming. I finally just got up from my recliner. I went over to my floor of my den. I got down on my hands and knees, and I said, I saw this or heard this on television before. I got down and said, I'm done, Lord Jesus. I don't want this anymore. I don't care about the money. I don't care about anything. It's too stressful. I turned it over to you. That's what I've heard on the show before. said, get everything to the Lord. That's what I did. I stood up right after I did that, and the stress and the pressure was gone instantly.
Okay, let me take over from here. I'm going to take over. And so this is what happened next, ladies and gentlemen. That change that came over him, he all of a sudden, he couldn't live with the girl he was living with anymore, and that went away, and he couldn't party like he used to, and that went away.
Oh, yeah, everything changed.
Everything started to change and go away, and as he started to get a sense of peace in his life, the beautiful thing about this is, Tim, that even though, you know, you sold your business or you did whatever you did with your business, and it doesn't even matter at this point, you're still very successful. I mean, you went on. It's just almost like no one can stop something like that. When you're someone who can be successful, it's almost like you're going to be successful no matter what, doesn't matter what happens. And this time, though, you're successful and you actually believe in Jesus Christ with the success and you're a changed person. And I know for a fact what you do with a lot of your money that you don't want me to tell nobody, but I'm just going to say you don't keep it. You do not keep it, that money. I mean, and I'm talking about a lot of money. You give it to some people who really need it bad. So I'm just going to leave it at that. But that's from being a very, very spiritual person. And a lot of people, my friend, when they get to be successful, they don't want nothing to do with God. They don't want to do nothing with Jesus Christ. Are you kidding me? That's religious nuttiness. That's nuts. But tell me what you would tell them, being where you are and they're successful and they don't want anything to do with God or religion. What would you say to them?
Well, first, I'm telling them they would be making a huge mistake, because that's what changed everything for me. I found that God he opens the doors and closes the doors for you in the path that he wants you to be on. And when you're like I was out of control. I didn't know what direction I was going in. So I was on the wrong path. And I'll be honest with you. I did not sell my business. I closed it down.
Okay.
People are saying, why didn't you sell it and make all this money? I just didn't want anything to do with it anymore. I was done with it. But he opened a new door for me in real estate, which if you've noticed, most people, when they're in high school or so, they got a job and they're a waitress or a waiter. 10, 20 years down the road, they're still a waiter or a waitress. They stay in the same field that they're in. For me, I worked at the delivery business, and what did I do? I went into the delivery business for all those years. To make a complete different life change for me was something that I would not do because I was not comfortable doing something different. He opened this door for real estate for me, and I really haven't looked back. It's so much easier, and the money's even better.
Yeah, and you know what? See, that's the difference when you're a spiritual person. You become very grateful. And I like the way you put it, that he opened the door for you, because most people on the outside would say, well, it's you. You're just wired to be successful, and you're willing to be a risk taker and blah, blah, blah. There is something to be said about a completeness and a balance in your life when you add a spiritual aspect into who you are and you humble yourself and you realize that there is a creator, there is a being that you rely on and can lean on, and, you know, you don't have to, man, take in all that stress that you did. I mean, it gives me a sense of claustrophobia just thinking about when you had your other business, you know, and how well it was doing and how you say you felt trapped by your own business. That's pretty crazy. And I think a lot of people, only a certain percentage of people can really relate to it as such. You know, people that have gone to that level can understand. But when you do things with the spiritual side of it enveloped into it. See, there's a verse in the Bible, and I know people may not like when I preach, but I don't care. There's a verse in the Bible. It says, where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is freedom. And that's what I think people need to realize. There is real freedom in knowing that you have a God that's going to take care of things and work with you and open doors for you. It's like, whew, man, I'm so glad that, you know, I don't have to rely on me. And, you know, You and myself both are wired people to be in control and be in charge. And, you know, that could have been a personality trait that got us out of our situation that we were in as kids, even, to help us move into to what the world would consider to be greatness. You know, I didn't go into owning my own business and all that, and investing and having properties and all that. But, you know, in the broadcasting business, I pretty much went about as far as I could with major market TV broadcasting and that kind of thing. But I know that the same as you, you know, all the pressure that I experienced, I knew that I got to be fully reliant on God with this and know that there's an even bigger plan that maybe I don't understand right now. But because I'm fully reliant on God, that he is going to make sure that things go according to his plan. And I want his plan. Why? Okay, so to explain that to people. Why do you want God's plan and not yours? Because it sounds like, well, I'd rather do my own thing because I'm the person in charge. Tell me how you feel about that.
Well, I've always been the type of person to be in charge until I found out that I'm not in charge, which is good for me because it took the pressure off of me. It just seems like the doors keep opening for me and the path is lit and the doors open in directions that I normally wouldn't go in. It's hard to explain how they happen, but people come into your life for a reason, and you get
right.
The right people in your life because he's sending them to you in your life to send you off in these directions. So you always
right.
have to be with your eyes open and people that come into your path.
Right.
And
something I've noticed about you too is it seems like every once in a while you'll get a teenage boy in your path or a boy in his early 20s in your path, and you know, maybe you don't even realize what you're doing, but all of a sudden you're laying down a foundation for him. You're like, listen, this is what I would do if I were you. Don't do that. Don't waste your time with that. Listen, you got to make these kind of decisions. Stay away from this. Stay away from that. You're actually expending time into these young boys or young men even that they didn't have dads and they didn't get it at their house. You know what I mean? And it's almost like you're trying to you're correcting something that was a mistake with you. Now you're paying it forward and you're correcting it in other people so they can have it better than you had it.
I really wish I would have run into somebody back then like I am now that could have told me, don't do this, do this. It would have definitely veered me off. I would have got here faster than what I did. It took me 25 years to find where I needed to be. I could have done that in probably a year or two. And
exactly.
It was just a slow process.
And that's what I'm saying. You didn't have a foundation, like I said in the beginning, and I didn't either, and it takes twice as long. You can still get it all, but it takes longer. So laying down that foundation work is so very important with our young people, which is what I feel like that's a God calling on me, and I've been doing it, you know, for years with my inner city martial arts program, working with street kids who don't have either parent, former gang members, and now I'm going into Native American reservations. I am trying to do that to build a foundation for these young people, for the youth of America, of all ethnicities, so that they can get there a lot quicker than even I did, and that they'll, you know, it's constantly bantering them, good judgment calls, make good judgment calls. You know, the in the Bible it's called righteousness. You know, righteousness is just the opposite of wrongness. Do the right thing because it's for your own good. If you just make good judgment calls, you're not going to stall your journey like you will when you make bad judgment calls. Then you got to stop, you get caught, you got to fix it, redo it, go back, correct it, do it again. And it takes time to do that stuff. So,
you made me have a flashback back to my delivery company days. I made so many bad judgment calls, it cost me a lot of money because I didn't know what I was doing. I was just figuring it out as I went.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And, you know, that's kind of what I feel like, you know, I'm here to do. And, you know, and I know you kind of do it one at a time in your own way. But that's the story of a lot of people. And that's, if you know, if you're like me and you're like Tim out there and you're listening and you didn't have that foundation and you know what we're talking about, then I would say You're the person by divine intervention that God is appointing to go out and make a difference in the lives of young people yourself. Because we're here to make a difference and to help with the way God has wired us to do these things. I mean, and you, just like Tim, you can make all the money in the world. If you're not doing the purpose of divine kingdom intervention that God put in your life, you're never going to be happy. You know, I always say, Tim and I kid, if I could just get that one Chanel purse, because I love purses. And I got every, I got Vuitton, I got Gucci, I got Fendi, I got every purse you can think of, because in my day, I made good money at times working in major market TV, and I'm like, you know, I'm going to go get the Vuitton. And I did. But, you know, I still didn't get the Chanel, because that's like really, really, really high end. And I think, man, if I could just get that Chanel. So anyway, what I did is I went and I got a fake Chanel for a fraction of the price just to see if it would work for me. And so it kind of did. It's kind of like, you know, it's kind of like non-alcoholic beer. It's not really the real thing, but it kind of like kind of tastes the same, you know. So, and what the heck, everybody can look at it and tell it's not real. You can tell. But anyway, my point is, it doesn't matter if you have the purse or not, because I know a lot of people that have the real Chanel purse that aren't really that happy. They're miserable. They got all kind of issues going on. I want to encourage everybody out there to really seek out the spiritual side of your life. If you're successful and you make money, God bless you. But you know what? You could still be real dumb.
Yeah, you can tell people this all the time. It would be the most important thing that I would tell somebody when they ask, how can you be successful? I said, well, the first thing, you might want to think about getting on your knees like I did and starting at that point instead of trying to go out and build a business just on your own, because yeah, that's what changed my life. My first house that I flipped, I made $15,000. Didn't really know what I was doing, and what I did at that point, I took that money, 10% of it, and I tithed $1,500. Now, let me tell you, when I was a little kid going to Sunday school and church, the plate would come around. Everybody, I was just shaking in my shoes because they had to hand you the plate as you passed it to the next person. And a lot of times, I just passed it on by me. And if I put any money in it, it was a quarter, 50 cents. And if I went a dollar, that was just like, it hurt so bad. Mm-hmm. For me to get $1,500 out in a tithe after I just got money, everything changed from that. The more money I gave, the more money somewhere kept coming in and doors started opening. It changed me.
Right, and you bet. That's a spiritual law of giving, and I don't even know if people out there, a lot of them probably don't even know what tithing is. It is a biblical principle in the Old Testament under Mosaic law, but even bigger than that is you've learned to be a giver, and you can't outgive. You just can't. I mean, it's just a principle that comes back constantly when you give. But if you're not a spiritual person, it's real hard to give. I guess it's not impossible. You know, but there's no ulterior motive when you give as a spiritual person. You're just giving it, you know, and
well,
to make a difference.
It's very hard to get past of giving something away when you think you really need it. I mean, I was that person. But now I broke that chain, that barrier of holding me back. I give now. It just doesn't even faze me. It just goes out, and more things keep coming in, bigger and better things. It's really
The spiritual law of giving is something I want to invite you back to talk about, because you're absolutely right. But can you believe we just killed 45 minutes?
45 minutes.
I'm already over by 15 minutes, so I hope GM Jesse Bowen will be pulling a hook out on me and like swipe me off of here. So anyway, listen, stay right there, but I also want to tell you I really appreciate you being in my life for, you know, one of the earliest memories that I have, and, you know, you culminating to a godly man now, and, you know, having that spiritual understanding with somebody that you've known your whole life. Man, that's just a beautiful thing, and I really respect that, and I really appreciate that, and I'm so glad that you're doing good now and that you decided to trust me and come on my show.
Yeah, it was not as painful as I thought it was going to be, Karen.
All right, good, because I'm going to have you back. Okay, hang on a minute, Tim. Ladies and gentlemen, you know, I really appreciate you taking the time to listen, too, because time, man, it, you know, every, who has time? At very minimum, just pray for what I'm embarking upon, dealing with the youth of America and have for 17 years with Inner City Martial Arts. This is a program that has gone all over the world now. I have affiliates in Africa, East Europe, you know, lots of places, and I'm not taking credit for that. I thank my Lord and Savior for that. But this is something that I do as a martial arts master to try to go into these less fortunate areas, and I'm talking major ghettos and poverty-level areas of our country to try to put that foundation in the youth of our, of America. So if you would feel led to in any way support that program, I will not say no. And many people have already, so I want to thank you very much for that. You can reach me on Facebook, on social media. Karen Eden Herdman, and my group page is Master Karen Eden, Master of Inspiration. I think I got close to about 5,000 people there that are looking at my inspirational messages all day long, I hope. And that's something that I've found my niche in a long time ago is as a writer, as an inspirational writer. And I want to thank Century Martial Arts because I have more than one book out with them and I have two product lines with them just on the inspirational side of being a martial arts master. And also, what else do I have? Oh, I want to thank Taekwondo Times Magazine and Martial Arts Success. For over 20 years now, they both have given me a column to write my inspirational messages down. And I'm deeply honored. And I'm deeply grateful that something that I've been, you know, had light shed upon me about or something I've experienced can make the difference in the lives of other people. So as we continue to get into the holiday season, I just want to say thank you. That's what I'm thankful for. And thank you for supporting my products and my books. And they're still out there. So, if you want to buy Tim a Christmas present, then go get him my book. Okay. We got to go. All right. God bless you guys. Bye, Tim. Bye, guys. Okay. We'll see you guys next time. Bye-bye.
Hi, it's Joe Corley with a quick offer for all of our friends here at the AMAA. As you know, we never get a second chance at our first impression. So for those of you who could use some help with your first impression on your Facebook pages, on Instagram, and on your website, we're offering a special discount here from our Social Media Marketing Warriors team. Take a note if you can and check Facebook at Joe Corley's Social Media Marketing Warriors page. Take a quick look at some of our videos, then reach out to me on Messenger and I'll be happy to put together a personalized sample video for you so you can see what the high definition video will look like online. That's Joe Corley's Social Media Marketing Warriors, and in your message mention AMAA discount. I look forward to speaking soon. All the best.
This program is brought to you by the American Martial Arts Alliance and Who's Who in the Martial Arts. Visit our website so you can own a copy of Who's Who in the Martial Arts. This book is considered as the martial arts history book. Visit our website, www.whoswhointhemartialarts.com, or give us a call, 919-489-6100.